Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Still to come on the program in about 20 minutes time or so, Sherry Basson, the general manager of the Erie Otters, is going to join us. He had some player I've heard of this year. You know, he had an okay year. Some guy named McDavid was on his team. So we'll talk to Sherry Basson coming up in about 20 minutes time. Shift our focus to Anaheim, where they were embarrassed. Safe to say they were embarrassed after that Game 7 loss on home ice last Saturday?
I wouldn't say, really?
I'd say embarrassed. That game was over after.
Well, 4-0, wasn't it?
I don't know if I'd say. I mean, they made a little bit of a run towards the end. I don't know.
How close did they get? Did they get to 4-2 late in the game?
The final score?
No, the final score was 5-2, right?
5-3.
It was a 5-3, but yeah. They never got within a goal.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you guys. I mean, Chicago outplayed Anaheim in Game 7. I don't think they were embarrassed. I mean, I think it was Chicago's a better team. It was a close series. Went to 7 games, and yeah. You know, Anaheim
to lose,
you know,
that
had
way
a nice run. Frederick Anderson struggled, and Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff didn't have their best series. And got to give the Chicago Blackhawks credit.
All right, give Chicago credit, but to lose 2 years in a row on home ice in Game 7.
I think embarrassing is a bit of a strong word.
Fair enough.
And this is coming from a guy who's been embarrassed many times.
It's true,
it's not that they lost in Game 7 at home both years. I mean, that's a factor. It's the fashion in which they lost.
Sure, multiple goal losses. It's one thing to lose in overtime.
Well, the LA one was embarrassing.
The LA one
this
was
one was close to embarrassing.
Yeah, but Richie, as a whole, I'm not looking at that one game. I'm looking at the series
why Bruce Boudreau had his look like his job was on the line.
I think that's ridiculous, though. That your job is on the line based. I mean, you're talking about a dynastic team, right?
No,
is that a word?
Dynastic is a word, but why are they a dynasty? What makes
them
dynastic?
If they win their third cup in 6 years,
talking about the Blackhawks as a dynasty.
So I'm just saying, like in that Game 7. And you could look at the matchups, and you could say Bruce Boudreau didn't do a good enough job of isolating certain players. Like the Blackhawks are a deeper team. Rich talked about it, you know, compared to the Lightning. I mean, this Chicago Blackhawks team, there are 5 or 6 elite players on this team, and they couldn't compete with that. And you know,
there's a couple elite players on Anaheim.
No, I'm just saying, if you match the teams up, and I think almost this year during the regular season, Richie, that the Chicago Blackhawks, because they didn't put up 115 points, people forgot how good they were. But you know, this is Game 7, Chicago won that cleanly. I mean, they were the better team by far. But three of those games went to overtime. Yeah. It went to 7 games, and you got to give Bruce Boudreau some credit here. I mean, the guy. I mean, the team has one bad game, and all of a sudden he takes all the fall. I mean,
I don't think you can fire Bruce Boudreau based on that result. But I think think about it. They went to they were in the first round. They lost in Game 7 to Detroit. Second next year after they lose in the second round, Game 7 to LA. The third year they go lose in Game 7. The conference finals. So every year they've got.
Next year they should lose in the Stanley Cup final in Game 7.
Progress. Now, having said that, Bruce Boudreau's record in Game 7s is awful.
1-7 now.
And see, there needs to be context for that 1-7. Because there are coaches who probably have poor record. I don't know what the other records of many coaches. I'm not the Elias Sports Bureau here. But he's 1-7 in those games. Okay?
I thought it was the Elias Sports.
So he's 1-7 in those games. But to me, you need context. And the context is, of those 8 games, how many was his team the favorite? And I would say, off the top of my head, at least 5 or 6 of those games was his team, at least the home team, so the presumptive favorite, if the odds were probably even otherwise if it was in Vegas. Right? And remember Pittsburgh bombing out Washington in Game 7 of that second round series?
6-0, 7-0,
whatever
like
it was. And you have this one, and you have last year. I mean, that is a pattern of terrible performances when the series is on the line. That's why, to me, Bob Murray has to be concerned. I've always wondered about Bruce Boudreau's playoff coaching ability. He's an excellent regular season coach. I think he's a very likable guy. I think this year he did a real nice job, and I'm giving him credit. And I'm not going to say one game, or you know, even the performance in Game 6, but you knew Chicago was going to push there. One game should cost him his job. But I can see why Bob Murray is hesitant to confirm him as a coach immediately, because there's obviously some things he didn't like.
And that's why...
He has since then gone on the record and said that Boudreau will be back.
Oh, yeah.
But there was
yes, I know.
I mean, he's coming back. They were one game away from going to the Stanley Cup Final.
I don't know how certain it was.
Well, oh no! I guess I'm saying I like that they're deciding to bring him back.
Sure.
You're right. I mean, there was the chance, but you know, Bruce Boudreau, you know, he had obviously varying degrees of success in Washington and with Ovechkin, But, you know, they handled the Jets and the Flames pretty well. And then, you know, where's all the credit for that? And then they, you know, you go to Game 7 against, I think, a better team. And I know, you know, Rich is saying there's a pattern there. And I think that this is a make-or-break year for him in Anaheim.
How many Game 7s has his home team been blown out of?
Well, no, and I mean, and again,
was that Detroit loss on home ice?
It was,
yeah.
But I mean, Adam wasn't that good.
Does that fall all on him though, Rich? Like, is that all the coach? Is that, I mean, the team has to take some credit for that.
Yeah, but I mean,
that,
is
right?
that not a pattern?
Well, I'm not saying that
at some point in time. This is right now until the Ducks win another Stanley Cup or at least get back to the Stanley Cup final. I think next to Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff's name, they're terrific players. There is a bit of an asterisk right now that they couldn't get it done in the regular season, and they couldn't get it done in Game 7s on home ice. I know they won the cup, but they were not key members.
I don't
members.
Agree with that at all.
Why not?
Getzlaff was second in the league in scoring 2 years ago.
I know.
And
I'm
Perry had injury problems this year. Those guys both have 2 Olympic golds and a Stanley Cup.
I know, but Game 7, when they were the key driving forces on their team in the playoffs, neither guy could get it done in Game 7 on home ice. If you're going to blame Boudreaux, you got to give some sort of fault to Perry and Getzlaff.
Absolutely.
I agree with that. I just don't know if I would say that there's an asterisk besides they've won the cup. And while they weren't the big, you know, they weren't number one line players on those teams, that line with Dustin Panner was very influential in them winning.
Sure.
And they've been played key roles in Olympic gold.
Agreed.
And they've been very good. I mean, I know Getzlaff blew the Taves coverage and didn't have a good game 7 and didn't have the best series.
Mm-hmm. Didn't have a good game 6 either.
Yeah, fair enough. But I don't know if I would go that far. I think that looking at their careers as a whole, I think Boudreaux hasn't won that cup. And Boudreaux, I put more blame on the players' play. I understand that. But I wouldn't put an asterisk beside Getzlaff and Perry.
Right. And you know, it's tough to isolate. What is it exactly, you know, if you go deep into the dynamics of coaching in that Game 7, you know, is the team ready? Is the strategy and all that? I mean, these teams are so good and so close. And I think you're talking about the eventual cup winner. And you know, they take the eventual cup winner to 7 games. I'm just saying, I mean, you know, I know what you're saying, Rich. The specifically close games, close series, Game 7, Bruce Boudreaux, yeah, it's a pattern. I mean, he's struggled to have his teams, whether it's Washington or Anaheim, he's struggled to get them over that hump. And that the Anaheim Ducks team, they're the team that is trying to get over the hump. Chicago's been there year after year, right? And Anaheim, they were there, and they were really good against Calgary and against Winnipeg. And against Chicago, they met a better team. And that's why, you know, back to what you said, I think Bruce Boudreaux, if he doesn't take this team, and they're a good team, I wouldn't be surprised if the Ducks get back to the conference finals, at least, you know, Stanley Cup finals next year, they're probably going to look in a different direction because he's had the chance now, right? And he's got these players in their prime.
In his defense, present both sides here. In his defense, he has not had a number one defenseman on any of his teams.
Sure. A shutdown number
no,
one stud
a number
guy.
One, yeah. A number one stud guy on any of his teams.
That's fine.
So, I mean, that's a factor too, right, Iz?
Well, I mean, he doesn't have Chris Pronger or Scott Niedermeyer.
Duncan
Keith. The Anaheim Ducks.
On the Capitals, I mean, and the Ducks.
Campus Lindholm and Cam Fowler. And
good players.
Good players, but yeah, they're not Duncan Keith. They're not Drew Doughty. They're not Shea Weber. I agree with you on that one.
It's almost to the point where you can't win the Stanley Cup unless you have the bona fide number one defenseman.
Well, not almost at a point. It's been like that forever, except for Carolina.
Well, I mean,
that's it.
Yeah, look back. It's you're talking
it's
Drew
Doughty. Doughty and
you're talking.
Doughty
you want to go
Keith.
Back to 2011? You're talking Zdeno Chara.
You're one of those 50 teams right now.
Yeah,
the only team you're going to leave out is the Carolina.
If you want to go back to Detroit, Nicholas Lidstrom,
every team.
Pittsburgh, Chris Letang,
Carolina, and nothing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, Nicholas Wallin.
We went over that six.
Glenn Wesley was number one defenseman.
Their number one defenseman on that team was who? Yeah, I mean, there was
Aaron Ward.
That's seriously that was who it was.
Yeah. Maybe name that entire
Pittsburgh,
defense right now.
A little bit, but Pittsburgh a little bit maybe, but basically one team.
Carolina. Mike Commodore on that team? No, he wasn't on the team then.
Yeah, no, I don't remember. Yeah, Nicholas Wallin. I mean, there's who else was on that squad?
We've done this before.
Yeah, no, we did the 2002 team.
The True. Team that lost.
Yeah, the Maurice team.
Right, the Maurice team.
Sean Hill, that was in 2002 team. Wasn't 2007 team had some guys they brought in late, too, didn't they?
2006 was the year they won the cup.
Sorry, 6, yes, that's
yeah.
right.
They're definitely, you know, they didn't have that bona fide number one defenseman, but you're right, Rich. I mean, that is the kind of maybe the X factor that isn't talked about as much. Like, you talk a lot about the top lines and those matchups, and those are important. But if you have an elite defenseman that can control the play, mm-hmm. kind of like a quarterback in the NFL, can control the power play and at even strength, it makes a world of difference.
You guys are forgetting about Franisek Kaberle, Brett Hedekin.
Yeah, I don't think Kaberle played a ton in that one, though, did he?
He played 77 regular season games.
Yeah, they played playoff games.
Yeah, 25.
They played 25?
25 playoff
games.
Oleg
Tverdovsky was on that team?
Apparently. He played 5 playoff games there.
Franisek Kaberle is Thomas Kaberle's brother.
Mike Commodore was on that team.
Yeah.
Who else do we have here?
Defense wasn't that
good. Andrew Ladd was on
Glenn
that
team. Glenn Wesley, Andrew Ladd, of
course. Well, they had, like, Recky, Wade. Did all these guys just pass their prime or still really effective?
Eric Cole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nicholas Wallin. Yeah, it was not a good
thing. Think about that defense, aside from that. You know, it's first year of the cap, right? After the lockout.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the joint recommendations by the NHL. And
took them that long to come up with those recommendations?
I have a feeling you're going to have an opinion on this one, Richie. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time, Sherry Bassin, the general manager of the Erie Otters, is going to join us. Talk a little bit about Connor McDavid, talk about some of the OHL prospects upcoming in the draft. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. As he mentioned earlier, Tom Arnold. Tonight at Rumors, a few tickets available, I believe, for the 10 o'clock show. Not much, though, so get on it real quick, rumorscomedyclub.com. And I'm reliably informed, another big comedian announcement coming down the pipe next week. I think Monday, maybe. Well, a big comedy announcement.
One of my favorites is coming for my birthday in July, John Lovitz.
John Lovitz, all sold out, of course, for John Lovitz. That went quickly.
There's been some big ones lately. Yep. Well, there's always big names at Rumors.
There you go. Monday, June 8th at 3 p.m., there's going to be another concert series announcement at Rumors.
So you know Tom Arnold's in town right now because he did a show last night, right?
And he's performing tonight again. He doesn't leave in between.
No, he doesn't go back. Is Roseanne going to be here? Darlene, like some of the other cast members of Roseanne, are they going to be there too?
I doubt it because it's not a sitcom.
Okay.
But it's a comedy show, but it's right. Possible. You know, you're never 100% sure.
What was that restaurant called that Roseanne used to work at? What was it?
She owned it. They served loose meat sandwiches.
Yeah. Is it the Pit Stop or something?
Sounds familiar, but I remember.
Yeah, those loose meat sandwiches. Yeah, have you ever had a loose meat sandwich, Drew?
I haven't. I really don't even know what they are.
Rich, have you had a loose meat sandwich?
If Drew hasn't, then I definitely haven't.
NHL and NHLPA came up with some joint competition committee recommendations. They recommended that the league introduce coaches' challenges to involve goals that involve goaltender interference and offside plays with a video review. They endorsed a change to the faceoff rule in which during all faceoffs in the defensive zone, the player from the defensive zone team must be first to put his stick down. What they did not reach a consensus on is a new overtime format.
Isn't that the only thing they actually needed to deal with?
That, and the only other thing I think they needed to deal with is making, if you're going to do video review on everything now, how you're not doing video review on puck over the glass plays is a little bizarre to me as well.
Drew, you know what I'm going to say to that. That penalty shouldn't exist.
Oh, of course. But if you're gonna slow the game down as much as you're going to slow the game down with these coaches' challenges where the coach has to hop on one leg in order to get the ref's attention and I think wave a flag and some sort of other ridiculousness.
No, I you know what? I like that. I think the NHL does a pretty good job at video review, Richie, as far as, I mean, look at what's happening in baseball. But look at video review. I think they do a good job of keeping it fairly quickly moving. To me, the overtime, as Richie mentioned, is the biggest one to address. Too many games go to the shootout, Rich. There's just too many. They got to solve that. They got to move to a 10-minute 4-on-4, as far as I'm concerned.
So they spent all this time to decide that the sticks need to be down first in the defensive zone?
It is mind-boggling that it takes them this long and this many months, and I mean, I'm not 100% sure what they're doing for all these months.
Shootout's a gimmick anyways that they brought in after the lockout to try and gain fan What happened to those ticket prices being
they're dropping like a stone, aren't they?
What happened to those ticket prices for the fan?
Yeah. They didn't quite go down as far as Mr. Bettman, Commissioner Bettman would have us.
So what do they have against? So they decided to stick down. So they're getting rid of the home ice advantage there because they want to find a way to increase scoring.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. Find a way to increase scoring. So the face-offs and the, you know, how...
Find ways to increase scoring without addressing the real ways to increase scoring, which are,
this,
you know...
This league is a disaster.
By the way, the restaurant in Roseanne was called the Lanford Lunchbox.
Thank you. I'm glad we clarified that.
It's a disaster. I mean, and they can't come up with... Just play 3-on-3 or play 4-on-4 for 10 minutes or whatever it is. Get rid of the shootout. Nobody wants it. You have these coaches doing press conferences. It's like Pomerantz's press conference. I don't blame him. He comes out after and he talks as if there was no shootout. He doesn't care. I know it counts for points, but the coaches are talking about the process and et cetera, et cetera. And you can't have a game essentially be disregarded, the result be disregarded because of, you know, what form was taken to settle at the end. I just don't understand. And so they come up with these rules.
Doesn't this all come back to what is being done, Richie, to address the lack of scoring?
Nothing.
I mean, that's the issue here. The issue is... What's being done to speed up the game? And we've said this many times before. If you reduce the amount of shootouts, there's going to be more goals because you're going to have teams going for the win in the third period and in overtime, right?
Well, wins aren't as valuable as they should be. A straight regulation win is not as valuable as it should be.
I mean, you just have too many points. The New York Rangers set a franchise record for most points this year, but you have all those shootout points. So, I mean, it's all kind of out of whack as far as you have, you know, every single team has 100 points now. I mean, all the teams that make the playoffs, certainly, the Jets had 99 points, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the Jets were basically a 100-point team, and they were an eighth seed.
It's
so
it's just they continue to fiddle while the entire league burns around them. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but that game...
I don't know. I mean, the NHL's in a good state. I don't think...
I think the NHL's in a terrible state. I thought that game one was awful. That game one was boring.
Game one was boring. I don't care so much about that one game one.
The entire season's been boring.
The season was not an impressive one.
But I don't think to say that that hockey and the NHL is in a bad state and to say that it's on fire, I don't think
you got to get rid of every game's 3-2. So you got to find a way to fix that. Take down the goalie equipment, if you do different things like that, fine. But making a guy put a stick down in his own zone is an artificial way to create it. It's like the puck over the glass.
And for those
how many guys were purposely putting the puck over the glass before that? All honesty.
None.
Were you ever in a game before that and thought, oh, this guy keeps putting the puck over the glass?
Yeah.
And again, the Marty Brodeur trapezoid rule, I mean, that's a useless. I mean, and you have goalies that are kind of almost in the trap, you know, out of the trapezoid. They can't play the puck.
But of all the stupid
rules. Take away skill. I have a skill. I can play the puck. I'm a goalie.
I know. Of all the stupid rules, that one almost bothers me less than the other ones. For whatever reason, it doesn't bother me as much. But you look at this. I mean, these games are, I mean, they're just not exciting. You have to reduce the size of the players. That is the only way.
Take away
their equipment.
You want to make them go on a diet?
I want them to wear less equipment, the goaltenders and the forwards and everything else to wear less equipment and make it much more, I mean.
That's one area. It's going to take, listen, I love hockey. I live and breathe hockey. I watch all different types of hockey. And I agree that the NHL this year, I mean, you got to have a 100-point score. You got to have more offense in the game. I mean, that's what people want to see.
Don't worry, because I'm going to put my stick down before you do.
The NBA. I mean, you watch the NBA Finals, and now that Kyrie Irving's out, it's going to be a little bit less. But watch the Golden State Warriors. Golden State Warriors are a tremendous team to watch.
I realize Jeff Van Gundy was on the show today.
Drew Van Gundy.
Why are the Golden State Warriors tremendous to watch? Because they score. Because they get offense. Because they play up and down the court the entire time.
And Drew, we're all in agreement here.
I know.
Corey, everybody. I mean, you could go down the street. Everybody's going to agree that we want to see more goals, right? Reducing the size of equipment, Drew, agreed. They've addressed certain issues, and there are other issues that just aren't going to have any impact. And we've seen, you know, more power plays over the years, but we've seen teams get better at penalty killing. So you want to have, I agree, you don't want to have 3-2 games, you want to have 4-3 games. And you know, they have to address that.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Sherry Bassin, the general manager of the Erie Otters, is going to join us. NHL might rely on some guy named McDavid to boost some scoring. We'll talk to Sherry Bassin about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Mm-hmm. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the general manager. It looks like we actually just dropped the call, so we're going to have to call him right back. So we're going to be joined momentarily by the general manager of the Erie Otters, Sherry Bassin. We're going to talk about some of the OHL draft prospects. Some guy named Connor McDavid. I think he might go first overall. I'm going to go out a bit on a limb there and say he's going to go first overall.
Yeah, and Dylan Strome might go fourth or fifth overall. They've got a couple of highly ranked prospects, but this is such an exciting time. Connor McDavid is probably the most highly regarded prospect since Sidney Crosby. I think we'd all agree with that. He might end up maybe being better than Sidney Crosby. It's such an exciting time of year, and you know, the people in Edmonton, they can hardly wait.
Yeah, that would be I'm sure the people in Edmonton, you're right. They've had a lot of high draft picks, as I'm not telling anybody any secrets at that point in time. A lot of high draft picks in recent years, but none that are, you know, there's some good players there, but the generational once in a decade sort of player like Connor McDavid's going to be.
Well, he's that good, Drew, that I wouldn't be surprised if Edmonton makes the playoffs next year. I'm not saying that, but he's that good that he can change a team like that.
I believe we are now joined by the general manager of the Erie Otters, Sherry Bassin. Sherry, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Fine. Actually, I'm coming to Winnipeg next weekend, so coming back home for a few days.
Well, terrific. The city eagerly awaits your arrival in that case.
Sherry, you might be able to stay with Drew if you're lucky.
Sherry, we obviously brought... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You guys go ahead.
Okay. We brought you on, obviously, to talk about Connor McDavid, to talk about Dylan Strome, talk about sort of the OHL draft-eligible talent. We got to start with McDavid. I mean, you've been around the game of hockey now for a number of years. For, you know, I don't want to ask you who to compare Connor McDavid to, but what's so special about this player aside from his talent on the ice?
Wow, he's a very special person. One Academic Player of the Year award 2 years in a row here. Because whatever he does, he is self-driven to be the best that he can be. He's got an inner drive. He's extremely humble. I mean, this guy, you know, I've often said, I've told a lot of people, I've had a lot of players with a lot of ability. I wish I had more character. I've had a lot of players with a lot of character. I wish I had more ability. You put them both together, you get a star. But the real thing about this guy, everybody knows him as a player. I know him as a person. He's a better person than he is a player. Gretzky called him the best player in 30 years. But Dale Hawerchuk, who your Winnipeg listeners know, 102 points as a rookie in the NHL, was a good friend, personal friend of mine, both from Oshawa. This is what he was quoted in the press. He skates like Bobby Orr. He's got the vision of Wayne Gretzky, and he handles a puck like Mario Lemieux. Now, if you know a little bit about hockey bloodlines, that's not bad bloodline.
Sherry, you've obviously been with Connor McDavid since he entered the OHL at a very young age. And how have you seen him grow as a player and handle the pressure? Because this year, as you know, I mean, it's been all about Connor McDavid, especially with, you know, teams like Buffalo and Edmonton tanking. How has he dealt with that pressure, and how has he grown, you know, as he's grown into a young man?
Well, let me tell you how special he is. First of all, to these great athletes, great doctors, great radio announcers, it's not pressure. Sure, there's adrenaline. It's opportunity. These guys thrive under opportunity. And he has just grown as a person. He didn't get the captaincy because he's got a belly. He makes other people better on and off the ice. And I mean, he didn't even think about it. People would ask him things like that, and he'd say, you know, that's not in my job description. My job description is to get this team to win. And his leadership is, I mean, it's so special for me that it's been in the game so long, and I mean, he's such a wonderful kid. I have a famous line that I tell all my players. do I like who I am when I'm around you? If I don't, I'm not going anywhere. I love who I am when I'm around Connor McDavid.
It's really interesting, Sherry. And this week or the past couple of days, there's some headlines made by, you know, Jack Eichel's comments. Apparently were private, confidential with the Buffalo Sabres about how he thought, you know, he was the best player in the draft. And it's not necessarily surprising, Sherry, that a player has, you know, confidence in himself and Eichel. But from McDavid's perspective, did he take it? I mean, he's not necessarily going to say it, but did he take it as a challenge that the draft was viewed at least a year or two before this upcoming June as being Eichel versus McDavid, who was going to be that top pick?
Well, that's a good question. I think that he has such inner humble drive, you know, that he was going to say, hey, this is an opportunity for me. You have to understand how committed and how passionate he is about the game. First one on for practice, last one. I'll look out sometimes when I'm there and he's helping the rookies pick up the puck. He's working on his game. When he works out in the summer, he's there by 7 in the morning.
Wow.
He's leaving at 10:30. I mean, then you call him in the afternoon and it's 28 Celsius. You hear bang and he's firing pucks. I'm sure he took it as an inner humble drive. And whatever the point is, he would never say that to anyone. What Eichel did. And whoever he said is apparently confidential. There's nothing wrong with him privately believing that, but let everybody else say that.
Mm-hmm.
People that are real good at something don't talk about how good they are. They talk about, when you ask McDavid, he gives the credit to his teammate. He said, you know, playing with these, he gives the credit to his coaching. There's no I with this guy. He is a franchise player, and it's not only his ability and his vision, he makes other players better.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Erie Otters General Manager Sherry Bassin discussing Connor McDavid. Going to shift away from Connor McDavid, Sherry, to another fabulous player you had on your Otters team this year. That's Dylan Strome, expected to be a top five pick, probably at worst in this upcoming draft. You know, what made Dylan Strome such a special player for your Erie Otters team this year?
His intelligence, his vision. Got to work on his feet and his legs, but his brother was a fifth overall pick. He's every bit as good as his brother at this stage. For sure as good as his brother, different kind of player.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy, he sees the ice so well. He's got a phenomenal shot. He's going to develop a little bit, take him longer to develop. And you know, there's only one McDavid in years, but this guy is a top echelon player. He's going to be a top center iceman in the NHL when he's given time to grow. Players love playing with him because he'll share the puck. He'll share the puck. You get open, you're going to get it. And he's got such great vision. He's big. His legs have to get stronger, and his feet and everything will. He said that about his brother. And he's going to be a top player. Make no mistake, it's just going to take a little longer.
Sherry, you have another player who's draft eligible. Well, several players, but another player that's supposed to go later in the first round, early second round, defenseman Travis Dermott. A lot of people have heard of Connor McDavid and Dylan Strome because they're top five ranked prospects. But you know, they talk about Travis Dermott being a very good puck rushing defenseman. What can you tell our listeners who haven't heard of Travis Dermott, and what do you see his ceiling is as an NHLer?
Well, he's definitely going to play in the NHL. Somebody gets him in the second round, and they had a good first-round pick. He quarterbacked our power play a year and a half ago. He's got a great shot. He can really skate. His dad's a big man, and he works hard off the ice. He's very muscular. They got him in around 5'11", but, I mean, he plays a big man's game. I mean, he can, when I tell you skate, he can turn on a dime. He really understands the game. He also loves the game. He works hard off the ice. And make no mistake with his ability, he's going to play in the NHL. You know, whatever time it takes, but because he's got such phenomenal skill, such good speed, and he's even faster with the puck, which is something that you don't see in a lot of people, which McDavid is off the charts faster with the puck. This guy, when he picks it up, he's very, very good hand and really, really sees the ice well.
Sherry, and you look at the, you know, you have those top two guys there, and we're talking about some of the other players around your squad. Another player is getting a lot of attention, you know, rumors about the Toronto Maple Leafs being interested is Mitch Marner out of London. What can you tell us about him?
Well, he's a gifted player. I mean, this guy, you talk about handling the puck, you talk about skate, you talk about shoot the puck. He gives and receives the pass so fluidly. He's an excellent player. This guy, I mean, this is a very, very good draft this year. And the irony of it is, there's a real good chance that five out of the top seven picks could come from the OHL. So it's been a very competitive, high-level league for us this year. Some years it might be the WHL or whatever, but he's a dominant player. He was fighting for the scoring championship, and That's another thing that tells you when you ask those questions about how people thrive under when they look at an opportunity. Strome won the scoring championship, 6 points in the final day. Mm-hmm. He was three behind Marner without McDavid being dressed. So there's an example that I was telling you earlier that these people, he didn't look at pressure to win the scoring championship. He had an opportunity. And he made it happen. And so, but Marner's a significant player and will be a significant pro.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Erie Otters General Manager Sherry Bassin. We're discussing some of the OHL draft-eligible prospects for the draft coming up in about 3 weeks' time in Sunrise, Florida. Sherry, wanted to ask you about Lawson Crouse of the Kingston Frontenac of the OHL. Certainly got the size, the prototypical size of an NHL power forward, 6'4", 211 at this young age. How do you see his future shaping out in the NHL?
Well, That's a good, he's, you know, I was lucky enough to win a couple of gold medals years ago at the World Juniors. When you're putting a competitive team, and you might have a McDavid, an exceptional player like that, it's pretty difficult to make that national junior team going into your 18th year and then win a championship and play a lot. I think he's got, I don't know how much, but I think a fair amount of logic in him. Because he plays that strong game, he plays hard in the tough areas. He loves to go to the blue paint. He can really shoot a puck. He can skate. And what's so important about these players we're talking about? You can just, when you come to watch Crouse play in the team, you can see that the players love to play with him. Love to play with him because he plays for his teammates. And I saw him as a 15-year-old. He was dominant. He played with Konechny, actually, and the place in Ottawa that's going to be his first-round pick. And you can just see, when you watch him, you see his passion and love of the game. He's a 200-foot player. I mean, we're talking about a lot of players people are going to be playing big money this watch. Couple of years.
Sherry, you mentioned Travis Konechny. He's ranked 15th overall in Bob McKenzie's latest rating. So it's the Jets draft 17th overall. They might have a chance at him. I guess, could you tell us about his game from what you've seen this year? And do you think he'd be a good fit for the Jets? I know he's a little bit smaller, but as we've seen over the last year, guys like Johnny Gaudreau and Tyler Johnson are small guys, and they've torn up the league. So,
well, first of all, the way the rules have changed, smaller guys can play and play him with the right people. Because if this guy was a little bigger, he'd be pushing for the top 4 or 5 spots. That's the only thing that's keeping him away from that. This guy, talked about smart with the puck. He can handle a puck real well in tight. Talked about how he you get open with him, he's going to get you the puck. He's a phenomenal skater, strong skater, quick. I mean, he's got all of the only thing you can say about them that people might, that people question is his size. But you know, those guys are sick of hearing about that. Every time they go on the ice, they know they have something to prove. I had a kid as a free agent, DeBrincat. He's 5'7", and got 104 points as a rookie, won Rookie of the Year of the CHL, because he's smart. These guys go to the blue paint. They don't think that they're not. Konecny doesn't believe that's how big he is. And he's going to be a very, very good player. And he's strong, and he has no fear, zero fear. He doesn't think about those guys he's going up against at 6'2". He wants the puck. And when you've got that kind of ability, it automatically says you find a way. These guys end up helping teams win, and he'll help an NHL team win in time.
Sure. I just want to have a final question for you, let you go, and we appreciate you joining us this afternoon. The Memorial Cup was just in Quebec City. Of course, you worked in the front office with the Nordiques for a few years there. Do you see the NHL going back to Quebec City in the next couple of years?
Yes, I do. And I'm sure they believe they're going to, you know, I mean, anything can happen. Pat is a very passionate fan base. And look at Winnipeg. It might not have as much corporate structure, which, like Winnipeg, as a lot of the communities like Toronto and Vancouver. But I'll tell you what, it's got a very passionate fan base. I was their assistant manager, was director of the hockey operations. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you this, when those fans, and I love watching the Winnipeg Jet game. You can feel that feeling through the TV. I was so excited for them. And the corporate people that stood up, the management people you got there now, and the coach I'm a good friend of, and the way the fans support the Winnipeg Jets, they just don't buy a ticket. They come and show everybody how they love the team. And they're proud to say, and those players that can feel that, they can feel that emotion. This business about Winnipeg not being a place to, that's exactly what's going to happen in Quebec City. Because when I was there with that team, that's such a passionate fan base. And I think when you see some of these things, you know, based on the past experience, if they get the right financial backing, I think everybody believes they deserve a team.
Sherry Basson is the general manager of the Erie Otters. Sherry, we really appreciate your time this morning, and thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Not a problem, boys. Keep punching.
And Sherry, let us know when you get into town and we can meet you at Bernstein's Deli.
Hey, I'll look forward to that.
Okay. Thanks, Sherry. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Sherry Basson for joining us to talk about Connor McDavid, talk about Dylan Strome, and talk about the entire OHL draft-eligible prospects. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Knott Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at knottautocorp.com. There's a charity fundraiser taking place today at Knott Auto Corp, noon to 6, I believe. It's for a young newborn named Baby Ted. He's having some health problems. So they're raising some money with a charity barbecue happening this afternoon at Knott Auto Corp. Drew Willey of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers is going to be down there. He's there from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock. There's games and prizes and all sorts of good stuff, and all money goes to little baby Ted and their family and their health struggles in this health issue. So check them out at the Waverly location, 1322 Waverly, corner of Waverly and McGilvery, and tell them a Legal Curve sent you down to check it out and go meet Drew Willie and raise some money for a very good cause.
Definitely go check that out.
Yeah, absolutely. UFA of the week time. It's a guy we talked about earlier in the program. That's Antoine Vermette.
Obviously, to center. Keith connects back off a stick, that of Sharp. Lightning give it up for Vermette. Score! A turnover and a tie-breaking goal. Bouncing pucks and winning races. Here's an example of the bouncing puck. Can't get it to settle down. Victor Hedman off the boards. Good separation play. And what a shot coming in by Antoine Vermette. Table Teravainen. Watch the stick right there. He bats it over to Vermette. Back of the net for Antoine Vermette, who was an overtime hero against Anaheim off the bar and in, Eddie.
He was an overtime hero against Anaheim. You heard that earlier in the show, and he was a hero in Game 1 between the Chicago and Tampa Bay, scoring the game-winning goal there. 32 years old, has a cap hit of $3.75 million, coming off a year in which he had 38 points in 82 games played, and he's a guy who does more, certainly is more than just the point totals that he puts up. You know, what's Antoine Vermette at this point in his career going to be eligible to receive? What do you think he's going to get on an open market come July 1st?
Well, guys, he's certainly helping his cause by the way he's playing here late into the playoffs with the game-winning goals against Anaheim and Tampa Bay. But, you know, Antoine Vermette was obviously one of the most highly sought-after guys, Richie, before the trade deadline. And he's a guy that's got a lot of skill. Smaller player, but he's a good face-off guy, and he can play center and wing. So I think at this point, you know, his career, and obviously he came up with Ottawa there, and then Arizona, he was in a situation where that team wasn't going anywhere. You know, I don't think there's a good chance, Rich, that he stays in Chicago with their salary cap issues.
No
and,
chance.
And Brandon Saad, who's probably going to get a nice payday because he's been really good throughout the season. I think, you know, your Vermette, when you're talking about a veteran player who at this point in his career can still put up some decent numbers, I still think he's probably going to be in that $4 to $5 million range, just because there aren't a lot of Antoine Vermettes out there, and we've talked about it. I mean, you can talk about Mike Green and Joel Ward and some of these other players. It's not the best UFA year, so I wouldn't be surprised if, especially a team that doesn't have that depth in their top six. You know, there's questions though, Rich, if he can still play in that top six though. Is he a third liner on a good team, right?
Well, I mean, depends on your top six, right?
Right.
If you're Chicago's top six, maybe.
Right.
If you're Arizona's top six, no question.
Right.
You can play in it, right? So, I mean, there are teams, I think, you know, that wing center role, as easy as your second line center, as you can be a third line, second line winger. I think he's more second line winger than a third, than a second line center,
you know,
right?
You talked about, to me, the obvious, some ties to Montreal. Not only is he from Quebec, but to me, you know, they're strong at center. And to me,
they're small at center?
They're small, and he's another guy that can play center or wing, but he's a bigger guy, and you hear Lars Eller's not happy there.
Yeah.
You know, so to me, you know, a team like Montreal might make sense, but again,
yeah,
is that
Montreal
addressing,
makes sense.
You know, almost a guy like guy like Joel Ward is really what they need, a bigger veteran guy, but Vermette's got more offense.
He's at the middle, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's going to be a spot for Antoine Vermette. On the open market, he probably gets 4 years, $20 million.
Yeah.
He gets $5 million bucks a year.
Probably.
Jeez.
Jeff Peach just got five and a half.
I know.
That's what
4 years, $5 million, 32 years old. Yeah, probably. You know, he's a useful player, and you can play in all situations too. He's a kind of a Swiss Army knife kind of guy. I like Antoine Vermette. I don't love him, but I like him. He's a good player. You know, he's pretty smart. You can coaches can trust him. His versatility is a factor. He moves around pretty well. You know, he's not the most consistent point producer at times, but he can get you that 45 to 55 range. And if you want him in a scoring role, and, you know, you can't always count on him, but you can put him there. And if you want him in more of a checking role, you can put him there. And in the market the way it is, and sure, the cap's not going to go up here, it doesn't look like, although nobody's ever telling you here.
Depends on the escalator that the NHLPA
can use.
They
can go up
to
the 71 if they use the 5% escalator, but last year they didn't use a 5% escalator, and there's benefits and detriments to that for the players. But there's still not a lot of free agents out there, and there's an amount of money they need to spend. So I see him getting that 4 years, $20 million.
And, you know, just thinking, Drew, of other teams that have struggled to at times to get scoring from their bottom six, you know, maybe a team like Pittsburgh, maybe a team like L.A., and is a third-line center role.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's kind of, you know, I realize they have Brandon Sutter there, but at times he was their second-line center. You know, if Malkin injured.
And now they're trading Malkin for
I don't want to hurt the value of the franchise.
Rich, like, you're talking, again, I'm spitballing here, but a team like L.A., Jarrett Stoll, what's his future in L.A.? Could Vermette be the third-line center?
They got no money there.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, like, it's situations like that, I think a team might offer him that type of situation. He'll be offered a contract.
It pays to get to July 1st is really what it boils down to.
It does pay to get to July 1st. And you see a lot of these rosters, you know, there's tons of teams that he could fit on.
Yep, sure.
Somebody's going to pay him.
I mean, teams that have to
not
reach
that good, but they're going to get paid.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you know what to expect from him.
As long as you're signing guys to 12-year deals before this new rule came into place, or even now, 7-8-year deals, there's going to be a limited market of talented players on free agency, and guys like him are going to get a lot of money.
Yeah, best case scenario, he's going to get you 50 points in a best case scenario, probably.
45 to 50, I said.
Yeah.
55. Around there.
Right, and so you're paying $5 million for it, so as long as you know that. Apparently it's raining outside, so I'm afraid your guys' golf game is probably not going to occur.
It's old news, Drew.
I know it's old news, but you know, had you guys golfed, you had a possibility to beat Tiger Woods today.
What did he shoot?
85.
Wow.
85.
Yeah. Is that his worst score ever?
He has to be. He had a terrible round at the British Open a number of years ago in like a driving rainstorm. I don't think he ever got to 85, though. 85 after he went, I believe, 3-under yesterday at the Memorial Tournament. A tournament he's won when he was in his heyday. He won it every single year. I know. It's just 85 for Tiger Woods. Hear me out for 30 seconds on an 85
true
for Tiger
no
Woods.
No one cares about Tiger Woods. He's irrelevant now.
Oh, I think a lot of people care about Tiger Woods still, Richard. I think you're 100% wrong there. In the golfers or golf fans, I think he's the only guy that people still care about.
Drew,
him and Rory.
Breaking news, Drew. We've traded you to Golf Talk Canada for a bag of used balls.
You belong to Mark Zucchino now.
In any event,
it doesn't matter. You know what? It's okay that it's not golfing, because last time I golfed, I shot 85 on the front nine, and you know, so
and you actually had 86 beers on the back.
And Drew had 85 pieces of Bernstein's New Jerky.
There you go. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and this segment is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer, baseball, bikes, skateboards, and the city's largest selection of athletic and casual footwear. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
Drew, you've always been more into the casual footwear. You're a guy that likes, like, you know, you're not.
Did you ever buy that baseball bat? You were going to go buy a baseball bat from Royal a few weeks ago. Whatever happened with that?
I might need one after listening to you all show.
haven't seen you playing any baseball recently, I got to say there, Ezzy.
I used to, you know, partake in the Jewish Slow Pitch League. But, you know, my baseball days are behind me. Now I'm into marathon running.
Yeah, how's the running going? You have to get to 7Ks by 2 weeks. You have 2 weeks to get there, right?
I have 2 weeks. I got to run the marathon relays on Father's Day, running now, with my sister and some other people. And
let me just interrupt for a second. The team, they gave you the longest leg, is that correct?
No, shortest.
Shortest. Oh, yep, okay. Shortest. I was confused as to what if
I do have short legs anyways, so, but not like Richie. He's got the height. He's got the longer legs, but it's going to be good. The first thing I had to do, just quickly here, first thing I had to do was quit smoking. I haven't smoked for almost 2 months now.
That's good. Don't you feel better?
You know, I do feel better, and I quit smoking, and you know, now I'm. I wasn't a big runner, but I know Rich runs too. What I do like about it is it's good psychologically. I find that you go on a run and it is nice. So
it releases endorphins, I believe.
Apparently, you were spotted on Osborne running or quasi running the other day
with Brixton.
I don't think Osborne.
Yeah,
I wouldn't. I mean, I
River maybe.
Either River or Wellington or the Crescent where I live, I wouldn't run on Osborne itself. It's sort of a busy street to run on.
Well, that's the same.
I may have been fleeing. What about is fleeing considered running?
I think Drew was running because they were just about to run out of pork tenderloin at the deli. You are spotted quite often, at, you know, on Corden. You're a man on the
it's
town.
It's not me so much as it is Brixton. I seem to have a unique dog in that she's. I don't know why people are able to spot me and her, but it's. I've been told that on more than one occasion.
What are we talking about here, Drew?
You don't want to talk about Brixton anymore?
Not hockey.
Okay. We're going to talk about Jeff Petrie, the 6-year, $33 million contract extension he signs with the Montreal Canadiens. We've sort of mentioned it throughout the course of the show. As Richie, you seem to be pretty blown away by this contract and this amount of money.
I went back and listened to our show when we did our free agent analysis of Petrie. Good thing we timed that out right.
Yeah.
And we said at the end of the segment, I tended to agree on this one, that he'd get kind of top end 5 years, $25 million. So he ends up getting 6 years, and so instead of getting 5 years, five cap hit, he gets 6 years at a 5.5. And then Mark Bergevin went out and said that he thought he took less money to stay in Montreal, and it's unbelievable. I mean, are you kidding me? You're gonna get more money than that in the open market? What? I mean, I'll take it at face value, I guess. I'm never really doing these GMs talk, but that's somewhat at face value. In any event, I mean, Jeff Petrie is a nice player. He can move the puck. We talked about this. Move the puck out of his own zone. He's physical at times. To me, he's not a leader, and I think that Montreal, he doesn't have to be necessarily. He can play on your second power play. I mean, he's a solid player, but $5.5 million. I mean, that's what's happening with these players now. And we talk about free agency. $5.5 million for 6 years. That's the thing that blows me away. 6 years. I mean, what has he done? The guy doesn't. Nobody will give up a first-round pick for the guy in free agency. And then Craig McTavish talked about how the value in the league
was not what
fans expected, and that they had a little bit of a skewed view. Fine. I know it was Craig McTavish talking about it, but fine. Either way. You know, it's kind of like the Camilleri thing. I always find that odd, too. Like, nobody would give up a second-round pick for him, and then he goes and signs a big contract. So like what's his value? It's not necessarily commensurate with what the league thought it was. And then he goes out and then he gets a massive contract. I just don't think that's. I mean, if you watch Jeff Petrie play, he's a number four guy to me. Number four, maximum.
Rich, do you
and
hear
he's
that?
Paid him big money.
Do you hear that sound? It's Mike Green.
Yeah.
Cashing in.
I listened to the show from last week you guys talking about it, and after that contract, even more so as he agreed. You've been saying this for a while. I wasn't sure I agreed with you. But Mike Green getting the big money, because, you know, Drew, you're playing devil's advocate. I think you're making a lot of good points about being a third-pairing guy, not defending well. And Jeff Petrie defends better than Mike Green, but Mike Green moves the puck far better than Jeff Petrie, especially on the power play. He's got the shot and all that. And he's a bit older. Right? A couple years older, I believe. But, yeah, I mean, you're... These contracts.
This might be the worst UFA year we've ever seen.
It might be.
I'm not even joking. Yeah, because this is after the third lockout.
Sure.
And what I mean by that is now the free agent age, Richie, is lower, and you're just not seeing, and you're seeing more bridge contracts and more players being signed to 6 and 7 year deals when they're 22, 23 years old, right? So you take out the majority of the top end 22 to 30, let's call it, talent out of the free agent pool. And this is what you're getting. You're getting, you know, a slightly above average 27-year-old defenseman making $5 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's why I'm not surprised that, you know, he got 6 years and $33 million. Man, Jeff Petrie's a guy, I don't think he's ever had more than 30 or 35 points in a season.
Has he had that even 30?
I don't think he has. And, you know, you talk about Mike Green, and at least Mike Green... You know, he's been there. He's been a guy.
His career high is 20. He had 22 points this year. His career high is 25.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's even lower. So, yeah. I mean, and that's his the strength of his game is kind of the offensive side. I mean, I agree with Rich. I mean, again, we're not picking on Jeff Petrie here.
Good for him.
He's had a good career
actually,
in the
NHL.
We
are picking on Jeff
Petrie. Well, good for him. Somebody
I'm not
to
blaming
off.
Him for the contract, but I'm telling you what I think about
his
game.
Yeah, we're picking on more so the economics, the sports economics, right? The state, the economics of the NHL right now. See... Again, getting back to kind of where the state is, the salary cap's not going up much this year, right? It's going up, what, $1 or $2 million?
Yeah.
So that you know, there's cost certainty, and they're equally sharing hockey-related revenue, and everything's high, and they got the national TV deal.
And when is it going up after this? Unless the Canadian dollar goes up big time again, when else is it going up? They've locked in a bunch of their revenue streams.
It's not. The only thing that would make it go up would be the 5% escalator if the NHLPA chooses to use that
Rich,
on a yearly basis.
See, I look at what's going to happen
The Jets sell
here.
More white jerseys.
As you know, Richie, the... what happens with after you sign players, it's about salary cap management. I think Chicago Blackhawks are an example of a team that's done it pretty well, keeping these elite players together. What happens, though, when Brendan Gallagher gets paid and Alex Galchenyuk gets paid? And you know, Subban's contract, I believe, is escalating yearly, right? He's got
well,
a high cap
hit won't, but
yeah. So he's got a high cap hit and Carey Price. And I mean, so then you have Jeff Petrie, who's
that's fine. I don't mind if Subban and Price have high cap hits because they're damn
no,
good.
No, yeah. But what I'm saying is, then you throw in Jeff Petrie in there with Galchenyuk and Gallagher, and then all of a sudden,
yeah, you're right.
He shouldn't
you're
be right. making that much money. Yeah. I like, good for him. He got a nice big contract after being one of the most sought after guys at the trade deadline. But it kind of raises the question, like, will he finish that contract in Montreal, or are they going to end up trading it because it becomes an albatross?
Very good points, and we'll, something that we'll obviously monitor over the next 6 years, because that's how long the contract is for. Let's go to Brandon Manitoba, Darren Dreger, with the latest on the Kelly McCrimmon watch vis-a-vis the Toronto Maple Leafs.
This whole GM search for the Maple Leafs is an interesting one. And, you know, I reported last week that I wouldn't be surprised if ultimately in the end of it all, it's Brendan Shanahan who just accepts the role of general manager. And that's why the push is on, and it continues to be on, for Kelly McCrimmon of the Brandon Wheat Kings. And, you know, I know the Leafs are putting a little bit of pressure. They're trying to get McCrimmon to make a decision sooner rather than later, but it's a tough one, right? He's the owner, he's the general manager, he's the coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings, and that team is going to be very, very good next season. They were good this year, lost to Kelowna in the Western Hockey League final. They could be better next year, but it's the lure of the bright lights in the National Hockey League, but I expect a decision on Kelly McCrimmon to be made perhaps within a week. And if McCrimmon decides to accept the role, then he'll work with Kyle Dubas, he'll work with Mark Hunter. And again, I go back to Shanahan, maybe you don't need a general manager, and maybe a new voice, a new guy in that process outside of McCrimmon upsets the apple cart a little bit. Hunter's going to handle the draft, there's no doubt about that. I believe he wants the job of general manager of the Maple Leafs, but if Shanahan's worried about taking him away from that draft role and that scouting supervising position, then maybe he just handles again the management duties and, you know, lets this hockey operations department with a body brought in kind of run the day-to-day operations.
I heard the Leafs brought in a guy to analyze the meat that they're serving in the lunchroom. That's the new news. I heard they're analyzing the meat for the fatty portion of it.
So if you're Kelly McCrimmon, your tongue-in-cheek comment notwithstanding there, Mr. Paul, if you're Kelly McCrimmon, he's sticking around with the team you own, the team that you coach, the team you're the general manager of in Brandon.
A very good team.
A very good team.
That's going to get better.
Nolan
Patrick.
And Stelio DiMatteo, I believe.
Mateos.
Mateos, okay. You know, what are you doing? Are you attracted by the lure of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
No.
To be one cog in the machine.
No. No. And it looks like what the Toronto Maple Leafs are trying to do is hire everybody from every different league in the CHL to be able to get insane in the draft. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
And we said from the beginning, why not Shanahan just do it? Again, that's not, I mean, the Kelly McCrimmon news is news from Darren Dreger that he broke. It's a good job there. But the Shanahan staying as a general manager has been talked about for a long time. So, McCrimmon, Drew, not only does he have that, he's a Brandon guy, running the team for so long, doing a great job, and the team that he has. I mean, we've had Bruce Lubke on a couple times talking about the step earlier than what they expected to be. Like, this year was kind of a surprise how they performed, and I don't follow them as closely as many other people do follow the WHL, but you go to Toronto, you already hear Mark Hunter apparently wants a job, so you're going to work beside a guy who wants your job. Kyle Dubas obviously wants the job. He's speaking for the team all the time. Brendan Shanahan's going to want to stay in it. Mike Babcock's going to want to stay in it. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, never mind the guy they bring in to evaluate the meat that they serve for lunch.
Yeah, we've had Kelly McCrimmon on the show a couple times too, and he's done a great job with the Brandon Wheat Kings and where they're at right now. You mentioned some of the prospects like Nolan Patrick, who isn't going to be drafted for a couple of years, but he had a great rookie year. And, you know, I'm sure he's about...
Sorry, as we were on the air, the Leafs just hired a guy to monitor the heartbeat of the player while he walks down the stairs.
I agree with you, though, Rich. All joking aside, which we do a lot of, obviously, on the show, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And you're
That's
right.
Sure.
And Darren Dreger even said it. Mark Hunter is going to run the draft. You got Kyle Dubas there, who's, you know, running spreadsheets or whatever he does.
Yeah.
And So, I mean, there's, I don't know if that's the most ideal situation to pluck Kelly McCrimmon into, but again,
Scott
I don't know.
Pellerin
if,
now, like they got yeah. like 35 guys yeah. working on this team.
I think they have Steve Staios.
He just left.
He just left. Is that what he did? Okay. Yeah. And I understand Kelly McCrimmon, maybe one day he wants to go to the NHL. It's certainly possible, but I'm not sure that Toronto would necessarily be the right fit for him. Why does he just want to go and be another guy? You know, one guy in a group of 10
First
or
of all,
8
I,
or 6.
I'm
or,
not saying he would sell his interest in the Weekings, but he'd make more money in Brandon than Toronto. You might, it might sound crazy, but that's
how successful
probably,
the Weekings
probably
are.
The case, right? So,
yeah.
And, you know, I just don't think that job is the Toronto situation is as appealing. Babcock's going to want a big say in matters sure. and certainly a great coach, but.
And every time he's tried to take a step back from the Weekings, you know, when they brought in Corey Clouston to be the head coach, and they had a different head coach before that, I can't recall. You know, he's always had to go back behind the bench because the team is never quite as good as it is when he's behind the bench and he's in charge of the.
Shows you how highly regarded he is in hockey circles.
Absolutely.
We already knew he was highly regarded in hockey circles, but the Toronto Maple Leafs, they want him.
That's right. We might sort of overlook it a little bit here in Winnipeg, you know, because we're not as focused on the Weekings, but you're right. He is that highly regarded in hockey circles. It'll be interesting to see the decision he makes, you know, regarding his future with Brandon and everything else. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. One final segment on this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. As always, Bruce Springsteen brings us back from break. Richie, you got to give a shout-out?
Yeah. Cousin Jesse Pollock did a nice job there booking Sherry Bassin for us. So give him big credit. We're going to have Jesse in. He's going to be back this summer doing some work with us. So I'm looking forward to that.
Look forward to that here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. We finish the show each and every week with one segment called Rapid Fire.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday morning. Given the Boston Bruins' perilous salary cap situation, do you think that RFA defenseman Dougie Hamilton will receive an offer sheet? And if he doesn't, can an argument be made that it's because NHL owners are colluding with one another?
Whoa. It's a pretty serious question there, Drew.
Why would they give him an offer sheet?
Why would another team give him an offer sheet?
Yeah.
Because he's a young,
you have to pay
defenseman.
Enough money to make it not worth their while to match, and then you have to give up tons of draft picks to do it. The system is in place. The system that has been collectively bargained essentially prohibits offer sheets.
Yep. When was the last offer sheet, Ryan O'Reilly? Yeah,
because it's not the cost benefit's not there.
So was Ryan Shea O'Reilly,
Weber,
Rich?
Was it O'Reilly after? Yeah, he was after Weber.
Yeah. Weber was Philly.
Yeah, Weber was Philly.
Yeah. No, I agree with Rich. We said Jarmelson with the Sharks.
Yeah.
Rich is right. If you sign a guy to an offer sheet, there's a really good, you have to make it so there's a really good chance you get him, which is hard because then you have the comp.
Well, then
the
you have to overpay
picks,
him, and then you
right?
have to give up like 4 first round draft picks. The price you have to pay for Dougie Hamilton is going to be close to 4 first round draft picks. I know it's scaled up every year. I don't know what it is this year, but.
And Drew, remember what they did with Ryan O'Reilly? They offered him so much money in 1 year of the contract. What was it, $7 million or $8 million?
Mm-hmm. Wait, let me ask you this. What would you pay for Dougie Hamilton in a trade right now?
Maybe a first and a prospect.
Probably even two. Probably get you 2 firsts, probably.
Sure.
The system, you have to give up that plus overpay him. So why would you do it?
You're asking for a young defenseman or forward in return. Yeah. I mean, Dougie Hamilton now has been in the league for a couple of years, and he's in the top 4 of the Bruins, and he's someone that they factor in 10 years, you know, down the road. What was he, 11th overall, I think? He was a first-round pick in the top 10 or
15.
Or
9, I think.
Yeah.
Or
he was the second pick in the Kessel trade, right?
Yes, that's right.
Wasn't he right after Scheifele, actually? No, it was Couturier.
It was after, that year.
Yeah.
That's right.
According to TSN insider Pierre LeBrun, the Edmonton Oilers have expressed interest in acquiring one of the following goaltenders, Robin Leonard, John Gibson, or Cam Talbot. Of these three goalies, who would be the best fit for the Oilers?
Rich, I want to say John Gibson, because John Gibson has not only proven himself at the AHL level, but last year and for a little bit this year, he didn't play much this year because Frederick Anderson seemed to be in net for most of the season. You know, he's a good goalie, and they're roughly around the same age. I think Gibson might be the youngest out of all of them. Cam Talbot, though, I mean, you know, you talk to especially, you know, people around the Rangers team, when Henrik Lundqvist went down, Rich, and remember he went down with that concussion, that, you know, that issue, people thought Lundqvist wasn't going to be out for that long. He ended up being out for, was it 2 months at least, and Cam Talbot was very good. So he, maybe, you know, and they signed, you know, the college free agent there from Boston College or Boston University, Matt O'Connor. That was Ottawa. Sorry.
Ottawa then, yeah.
But the Rangers were in on that. So I would probably, out of those three, John Gibson would be the one that I like the best.
Gibson's 21 and Leonard's Talbot's 24. 27 and Leonard's 25. Yeah. So in terms of which is the best fit for the Oilers, I think all three of them are good fits. I'll say that first of all, because they're all pretty talented netminders. Leonard's the most temperamental of the bunch. But he's also the most kind of, he's had a fair amount of seasoning, obviously. So is Talbot, and he's put up good numbers with the Hartford Wolfpack. So I would say, is it Connecticut Wolfpack now or Hartford Wolfpack? So I would say you've seen the most probably that you liked out of Talbot. But I would say Leonard is the best fit.
Rich, you know,
he needs a veteran beside him, though, because he's very, he needs a veteran beside him, but you have to let him know that he's the guy, too. Because I think he wants to be that guy.
He needs a mentor.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
To me, I think the best fit is not one of those three guys. It's Craig Anderson. But it looks like Ottawa wants to keep Craig Anderson there with Andrew Hammond.
Yeah.
That's so that's, but
because they can get more for Leonard on the trade market.
All three of those guys are upgrades probably on Ben Scrivens.
Well, apparently they're asking for a top six guy for Leonard.
Really?
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Fluto Zinzawa of the Boston Globe reported that number two ranked 2015 NHL draft prospect Jack Eichel has been telling interviews at the draft combine in Buffalo that he will be better than Connor McDavid. We spoke about this with Sherry Bassin earlier in the show. Do you appreciate Eichel's confidence, or does it borderline on being cocky?
You know what? In this situation, I appreciate it, because I think, especially when Tim Murray came out and, you know, they were disappointed that they didn't get the first overall pick, and then, you know, it was kind of construed as that meant that they didn't want Jack Eichel, which, by the way, I thought was totally not what he was saying at all. But I like it. I mean, first off, why are some of the top prospects at this combine? Like I understand we talked to Craig Button about this.
Sure.
About, I understand the purpose of the combine, and there actually is a big purpose. You know, you go back to years, and some of these guys don't test well, and that impacts them. But it's about the interviews and them. You know, there's a reason for it. But some of these top guys, I'm not really sure why they're there. You know, Connor McDavid's going first overall. You know,
sure.
So I have no problem with Jack Eichel's comments.
Rich,
people need something to talk about.
Okay.
You know, I mean, oh man, a guy thinks he's better than another player in the league, and he said it in a private meeting, and now that's a story. It's like, well, they need 24 hours news. This stuff is like ridiculous now. It's unbelievable.
The NHL announced that the 2015 NHL Awards will be hosted by Rob Riggle with musical guest with a musical performance by Daughtry.
Daughtry is the best. That's the best.
In your opinion, who would the NHL have to get as a host to make the awards ceremony a, quote, must-watch event?
I think Ron McLean back in the day was really good.
Who's that?
I mean, here.
See the guy that wears weird colored suits and doesn't know anything about hockey?
No, he's the other guy.
Oh,
the guy they shunted to the sidelines.
Strombo last year?
Yeah.
Strombo last year.
No,
right?
I thought, wasn't it, what's his name? Cuba Gooding Jr. did it for a while, and the comedian, what's his name?
I have a great way to fix the awards. Send out a press release with who won the awards.
What they do. They announced in the NBA, they announced Steph Curry won the MVP. They announce it as the playoffs are going
on. That's
what
they should do. You know, before the game.
Yeah, I you know what, Drew?
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Quickly, Richard Pollock, cheer, cheer.
My cheer goes to the competition committee that can't make a damn decision on what they're supposed to be deciding.
That was quick. Ezzy, cheer, cheer.
Bob McKenzie, he wins the Elmer Ferguson Memorial Award for Excellence in Journalism, which is obviously recognized by the Hockey Hall of Fame. So he's been doing it for years. Hockey News, Toronto Star, TSN, obviously. So Bob McKenzie gets my cheer.
Sounds good. I'm going to wrap it up. Tomorrow I'm participating in the Riverview Health Center Cycle on Life.
Yeah, it's a good cause.
It's a good cause, so I'm going to cheer all the people involved in that great event. It's taking place at the Riverview Health Center tomorrow morning, so thrilled to be involved in that event come Sunday morning. Hopefully it's not raining and nice weather for the event tomorrow. That's it for the show. Big thank you to Sherry Bassin of the Erie Otters, and big thanks to Ken Danico, New Jersey Devils analyst. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Royal Sports, Not Auto Corp, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, and the Linden Market Dental Center. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com. For Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Corey, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball here on TSN 1290.